listening to the Doctor Who podcast from Casterbridge. My name is Christian Corley, and with me is James McLean. And this week we are here to have a chat about Doctor Who Flux, Episode 2, War of the Sontarans. And it just occurs to me, as we start this, that I said on Facebook, we'll be asking for comments after the episode, and I forgot to do that. So I'm very sorry, everybody, if you wanted to comment. We'll catch up with that. And it's always good to have listeners' thoughts on the episodes. But we'll catch up with that next week instead, I think. So in War of the Sontarans, it doesn't properly resolve the cliffhanger we saw at the end of episode one. But it is an episode that carries on with the same pace and energy that we saw in episode one. It doesn't seem to lose it. In fact, it brings some new dimensions to it. And you've also got the character of Mary Seacole in there. We have Sontarans. I'm pretty sure that Sontaran's taller than he should be. And although Scottish as well, which I thought was amusing. And he should have been wearing a kilt and have some bagpipes playing in the background at some point. Yeah, I'm pretty much certain I enjoyed the episode. So that's the end of this week's pod now. Which, James, I mean, I was sat there, I watched it on catch up a few hours after it aired, and I was pretty happy with it.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. It's probably the most enjoyable Doctor Who I've seen since, I don't know, for me, since the end of Tennant's era, with a couple interspersed in between. In terms of being energized by it, I haven't felt as energized by the show since then.
Yeah, it certainly seems to, I mean, use that word again, it certainly seems to carry some of the same energy and enthusiasm and pace as the Tennant era, doesn't it?
Paul Cornell, I think, said this morning on Twitter that it was like sort of like a Netflix doing the War Games. Mm. Netflix series doing War Games, and there is a kind of feel of that. I thought it felt very much like last week, which I think was important, that, you know, the first episode doesn't give a vibe that's lost in your next episodes. It didn't sort of go to a straight format, as I was wondering whether it would. It kept to it jumping around. Yeah, I thought it was good. It was imaginative. There were some things in there which I suppose we can talk about, little niggles if we're going to be critical, which I think we should.
Because okay.
Just for the sake of balance.
Yeah, sure.
Nothing is ever perfect. But generally speaking, I thought it was brilliant. I thought John Bishop was excellent through it. I thought Jodie Whittaker and the way they did the Doctor through it was spot on. That felt like the character she should always be, but is not always quite there because they tried to whimsy her too much. And she worked really well through this. She works well under tension. It looked great all the way through. There were some really good shots on the docks, which you know, in terms of effects and sort of creating more expansive areas, yeah, such as the shipyard, were really impressive, to the point where I barely noticed them at first because they were so well integrated. There was a lot of fun in there. There wasn't much scares, which I think is absolutely fine. Wasn't one for scares, but each piece was imaginative. I thought the Planet Time was an imaginative idea. I liked that. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, and it was plenty of fun. I mean, those scenes of Dan running around with a walk, like the way he was holding it, it just added a nice level of humour to otherwise quite serious proceedings, I thought, without kind of spoiling anything. I was sat there chuckling.
I mean, he's a wonderful character, and I don't know whether some of that is a British thing. I don't know how well he translates abroad. But because we have... every region of the UK, as if you're in America or anywhere else, you have different regions, you have different sort of archetypes. He plays to some of the positive archetypes around Liverpool and around that region. And I think that was really good. He's funny. He's got that sort of, the sort of archetype of, I suppose, like a sort of like a friendly aggression that I think is sometimes associated with Liverpool is that it's a sort of very sort of forward, quite engaged in your face manner. But it's generally speaking, my experience anyway, it's quite a positive energy. And it's, from my understanding as well, it's quite a positive city in that sort of sense. And I think it's nice to see that. One thing I do like that Chibnall's done, I mean, I know you had issues with his depiction of Sheffield, But it's been nice to see it pull away from London and pull away from Cardiff and
Hmm.
try and do some other things. And certainly, I think Liverpool's been a really good move. And he's just funny. He's funny. His delivery's good. I think his delivery sells it. Like you say, his body language sells it. And the way he holds the walk is kind of funny. I think it's great. I think it's been another great thing this show. I mean, it's the first time, like I say, since. I say Russell T Davies. I mean, there's been ones in Moffat's that I have liked. I mean, I thought The Girl Who Waited was a brilliant story. You know, there's some really, there's been some good stuff since then. I'm not denying there hasn't. But I don't know. I think I've always gone into Doctor Who since 2010, feeling like it's going to have to work to entertain me
Yeah.
because of the way it's done. So if I'm entertained, I'm really happy, but I'm not going in expecting that to be the case. And I'm in a position now where I kind of am. And while I didn't mind a lot of Chibnall's earlier stuff this season, I can't pretend that I was still in that same place, really. I wasn't 100% that each episode I'd enjoy. And there were quite a few that I did enjoy, but I didn't go in feeling that. Well, now I have a sort of confidence that the next episode I'll enjoy as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm the same. I think as well, you mentioned Liverpool before. The thing with Sheffield is it never felt like Sheffield. Not the Sheffield
Right,
that I know, the
okay.
Sheffield I've visited several times over the years. Kerry's family lived just outside Sheffield. My wife, she was born not far from Sheffield. So it's never really felt like Sheffield watching it on TV. As what seeing the Liverpool portrayed, that does feel like a microcosm of Liverpool.
Well, I hope so, because, you know, I'm not from Liverpool, so I feel cautious about saying whether it is or not. But I think Liverpool has had a lot of sort of ne negative caricatures over the years, often in comedy, in British comedy. So I
Yeah.
think it's kind of nice to have something which has comedy, but it's not comedy which is like Punch Down. It's it feels a place you'd like to be, and I think that's good. I think Sheffield had that as well. But like you say, if you're more familiar with Sheffield to know whether it feels like it's an authentic vision of the city. Well, I don't know. I hope it is, but I think it's a good positive. It's nice to see Liverpool get some a good positive vibe.
Yeah, definitely.
But the rest of
So
it's good. Yeah.
we've got Sontarans
Yeah.
traveling back in time and pinching the Crimean War so that they take the place of the Russians. They've conquered what was Russia and replaced it with a place called Sontar. And you have this scenario where British troops or troops from the British Empire are going out to fight against the Sontarans every night and being completely massacred, or every dawn and being completely massacred. It's quite dark, isn't it, really?
It is, and one of my niggles was that I didn't feel that I was totally sure I understood some of the backdrop to this, and that could be just being me and being a bit slow on this. But I mean, because they made a big thing about them not knowing, really being able to remember what Russia was or China was, and yet there was a suggestion that this was a staging ground. So had it been a staging ground for hundreds of years preparing for something, or was it very recent and the change in time was meaning why they couldn't quite reconcile whether what Russia was, because they could kind of remember the word but didn't. And I felt that didn't really land for me. I didn't really feel I quite understood that, and I don't think it was important to enjoy the story, but in terms of exposition, I didn't feel very clear. I mean, maybe you've got a better understanding of it than I did.
No. The thing about it, I think, probably requires a bit more knowledge about the Crimean War than the majority of people, certainly of our age, have. I don't know if it's taught in schools. It wasn't taught in the schools when I was at school. So
No, same here.
it's a bit of a tricky one, in that respect. So I think we really need to kind of just trust that. I mean, there was clearly a world created for it, and it felt authentic, whether it was
Yeah,
authentic or not, it's another
yes,
matter, but
it
it felt
did.
authentic, so.
I just wonder whether there was an edit that was unkind, which sliced a bit of exposition out, which would have made that for time, because it was a long episode as well. It was about an hour. But I wonder whether something hit the casting room floor, because I didn't quite understand that. I got the impression that there were like different staging. My memory, because I only watched it once, there were different staging grounds, and that was the first one to go forward as a pilot. So I don't know. So I just wasn't quite sure whether Russia and China had been forgotten because of the impact of temporal change, or whether it was that they'd been, as you say, that the war, that they'd sort of arrived in China or Russia, and had just been slowly conquering it over the last, I imagine, a few days for them, to be fair. And that's why they, because it was also kind of feeling, especially, well, why they, why, if they're so undefeatable, why is it taking so long to take over the world? Because it seems kind of an easy thing to do. But I suppose it's a small group who've taken over Russia and China, and I suppose we've got to assume they've been doing it in a way that they enjoy. So it's been sort of ground tactics rather than sterilization of an area. So maybe they've been there for time. So yeah, like I said, that wasn't very clear to me, and it didn't bug me, but I kind of felt that the setup desire required just a little more transparency as to the background, because it's quite a big deal that you're telling audiences to swallow. The Russia and China have been totally swallowed up, but it doesn't really sort of suggest a time frame. And again, maybe someone who's watched it and watched it better than me in your comment section will tell us differently.
Yes, definitely. So we've also got the secondary plot, haven't we, with Swarm and Azure and Vinda and Yaz as well. As little I know about Crimea, I've at least felt I was engaged with it. I couldn't really get into these segments because I didn't really understand what was going on, and I'm not sure that the pacing of the other story and the cuts to this story were giving it enough space. Can you explain to me what's going on in on the planet Time?
I think there is an argument that, and I know a lot of people say this to the companions, is that to some degree you only needed the two storylines in this. You only needed the Liverpool and the Crimea War for it to work, and probably to work smoothly. I kind of like the insert because, again, it felt like it was following the format of the first episode, where it was trying to break the expectations of Doctor Who, where normally you would just have a companion maybe in a slightly different area doing something else while the Doctor does the main thing in the main area, which is what you'd have if you lost the time segments. I didn't mind them. I didn't have the same problem as you had. I had a problem that I still don't find Yaz engaging. I just feel the there's just. There's just not enough there, sadly. Again, it kind of feels like a Clara. It feels like Clara series 9, was it? No. What series would it have been? I'm trying to think what season it would have been with the. Oh, well, I've been 9,
Hang on
where
then.
she's just with the Doctor, and it's just kind of. I just don't know. She just does nothing for me, unfortunately.
She
And
does
so I
have,
found that hard in those segments.
yeah, she does have the unfortunate, I was going to say it's unfortunate that she doesn't seem to be as engaging as either Dan or Vinda, and Vinda's only had about 5 minutes of screen time in the entire two episodes.
Well, I mean, I know I'm unusual that I quite liked Ryan and I liked Graham. Out of the three, I felt that she was the weaker link, and only solely because of the way I think the character was set up. As I've said before, that I don't find there's anything particularly engaging in a character who feels that they're above their station. You know, the reality that we all live in is unrewarding to them because they're more special and can do better. And goes off around the galaxy. I just don't, as I've said before, I don't really get that thrill. And at the moment, I don't even really get a feeling of why she's there. What's her reason to being there? Because, I mean, as I was saying when we were watching it last night, that scene where Dan watches three Liverpudlians get executed, you know, that's the darkness that they carry by going on these adventures. And yet you don't see it reflected in the younger companions as much. And I find that deeply troubling. And I don't feel that I don't really feel like Yaz would have done anything except get a bit angry about it. The shock of actually watching three innocent people being shot is a terrible thing. And I kind of like the way that Dan portrayed it, the way that Dan did it, John Bishop did it, and how he was directed. And it felt kind of authentic, 'cause it kind of works with his character, because there is a certain fresh, there's a certain attitude they're given the character which makes you feel that that person would feel it but would press on. And maybe it's just simply that they've never found a sort of authenticity to Yaz, that she feels kind of being constructed rather than given a sort of real agenda. And I think that must make it a very struggle, must make it a struggle to play her, and it must make it a struggle to give her authenticity in some of the scenes. And I find that, and this is, to be honest, it reminds me of the echoes of the past. It reminds me of the echoes of those companions who did kind of feel like Mel, who, Bonnie Langford was, was a good actress, and as we've seen in Big Finish, she can do great stuff. But when you don't give her a proper rooted backstory and personality, it's very hard for the actress to engage in that person. Peter Davison said the same. Stephen Pacey for Tarrant and Blake Seven. There's if you don't really give them out roots for the actor, it can be very hard to make that engaging. Now, saying that, I read a lot of people on Twitter who love Yaz, so that's just my feeling of her, and I'm glad that they do like her. But yeah, I didn't really feel engaged in what she was doing there. And there wasn't that much, as you say, for her to do. The idea of the time planet I quite like. So I get this, I mean, people again in the comments can correct me if I'm wrong, but this is this argument that time as a force, if not regulated, is rampant and chaotic and evil. And I kind of like that. That's kind of what time is, if you think about it in Doctor Who. If it goes off track, nothing goes well. And it can fracture, it can, we've seen Reapers, back in 2005. It needs to be maintained, and this idea that these sort of five beings or six beings somehow sit for eternity, sort of regulating like a regulator of time to keep it tamed, is kind of a bold move that New Adventures, Virgin book series, and I kind of like that. So assumably, Swarm likes the idea of time being chaotic and unruly, and it either serves his purpose or simply just the way that perhaps he is an elemental who enjoys reality being like that.
There's
But yeah, I feel a kind of bold move.
there is another book parallel in the Eighth Doctor era when Gallifrey was destroyed. There was like another controller of time came along, wasn't there? And with the Time Lords gone, that might be what's happened here.
It could be. I mean, I get the impression, I know a lot of people dislike that, that this is again suggesting that either this is going to link to the Doctor's secret past, or a suggestion of what the universe was like, which maybe the Doctor existed in before Gallifrey, and this is her master from that period as such, and these were the people that created the regularity of time to a point that people like Gallifrey could appoint themselves as Lords of Time, because it was already being put into a rigid framework for them to exist within, which is kind of again bold. And I know a lot of people might not like that, and I understand and I respect that. At the same time, for me, I kind of like the it's what the One Piece would call, it's the next level. It's the next gear. You're
Possibly.
moving up a notch, and you've spent like the last 15 years saying the Doctor's bigger than Gallifrey, bigger than everything else. So in a sense, you've got to go, okay, how do we match this? And kind of this is what you do. You go, okay, well, there's bigger bad things in her past that we weren't aware of. She wasn't aware of. Game up. Because we are at that point. The Daleks fear her. Gallifrey, the last time we were on Gallifrey, well, before this last season, but with Capaldi when it was a living space, he just walked it. There was no fear of the Time Lords whatsoever. They were ants. Rassilon was sent running in a little ship. You wouldn't imagine that in Tom Baker's era. If you if you bring your main character up to a point where his contemporaries are nothing but little ants at his feet, what do? You've got to find something bigger. This feels like this is what this is trying to do.
Yeah, possibly. I wouldn't be completely averse to that 100%, but I do wonder if there's maybe that there's maybe a little bit too much for the average viewer to digest there. And I guess it's kind of, I mean, with the show going, I suppose returning in a way to the kind of
Yeah.
the fast-paced adventure, then that kind of that's a bit of a idea and concept to communicate, isn't it? It's quite a complex one in
Well, I
terms.
suppose it depends on how they do it. And to be fair to Chibnall, he's been quite clever in like how he uses Centaurans, which has been he applies them very much as if they are kind of like new creatures, even though obviously newer viewers compared to the very older viewers will be aware of how they work. The talk of the probe event, all the how they work, what they are, it's all dropped in there as if it's fresh stuff. And I suspect if this is like a bigger bad to things like Gallifrey, I'd imagine that would be no more than a throwaway line. I don't get the impression that he's here to set up a big lore, but I get the impression that in trying to expand the Doctor's horizons into mystery, these things might pop out. And to be honest, if he does over-explain them, then he's ruined the point of what he was trying to do, which is to add, to sort of almost re-inject the mystery into the Doctor. The Doctor has a mysterious past before Gallifrey that opens up new possibilities. But if you create the framework too quickly, surely you just rebuild what you've just tried to tear down. So if it is what I think it is, it is meant to be sort of like this is the beginning of time. This is a creature from Swarm is a creature from the far past, which the Doctor's fought many times. These will be sort of assertions which are given to the viewer. These are facts, but they won't need much more expanding other than that. That would be the way I would see it. And in a sense, it's kind of clever because if it is before her really being on Gallifrey, or maybe it was, maybe could it, because this could be stuff before she was even found. As we see in Timeless Children, so not even like her part. I suppose he does call her the Doctor, so maybe, so assuming maybe it is between when she was found and losing her memories. So I don't know. We'll just have to see. But like you said, I agree with your point. I think you've got to be careful how much they make this a big point to the point where it just swamps what is otherwise being quite an interesting, fun, energetic experience.
Yes, the overnights. Let's just have a quick chat about the overnights. For the first episode, it was 4.43 million overnight viewers, and for the second episode last night, it's stating 3.96 million. Now, the first episode went out on Halloween, and it had Halloween in the title. The second episode didn't because we don't have a Sontaran day. However, I mean, obviously, I mean, there's a, well, I mean, that's 500,000 less, and that's not unusual that subsequent episodes you get fewer. I'm imagining the Daleks and this, and we know the Cybermen are coming along. I imagine the Daleks are going to appear at some point. It's a six-part series. You would hope that it would build to an interesting conclusion and have some sort of big finale if we're kind of talking about a show that appears to have got the band back together and dug out its old producer, although of course it hasn't dug out its old producer. But you know, there's some similarities there. There's a kind of a freshness to it that recalls the show between 2005 and 2010. So you'd, I mean, those are low figures though, aren't they? It's as I mean, maybe the Weeping Angels episode will be something that grabs people as well. What do you think?
I don't know. I imagine the viewings, we're not going to see massive increases in viewing. I don't think television works to this model anymore. I don't. I'm not an analyst of figures, but I don't think that's how it works. I think a lot of it's down to there's so many factors involved. There's so many other channels now, so many different ways of watching it. there's so many other ways of events that can distract from it. I don't know. All I know is I think it's a good show. I hope that it gains interest as it goes along. I really do. I'm just very aware that, sadly, that the BBC has, or the BBC and the politics around it have very much siloed its content away from a lot of the people who would be increasing its figures. You know, the people who'd be watching Doctor Who and enjoying this, I think a lot of them are just watching Netflix because, you know, they can be young adults who are watching streams because they can't afford the TV license. And so the show loses a lot of its catchment. I think they're the people it would capitalise on. I'm not sure how it can reach out to them while it's stuck on iPlayer and through linear television, which I just don't think younger people are watching as much.
And also on a Sunday night.
That's a shame.
Yeah, and also on a Sunday night.
And also, it's... I think, again, it comes down to watching habits. And I think a lot of the time, unless, you know, iPlayer is your main go-to, you're not going to spot Doctor Who. And, I mean, I barely look at iPlayer. And I was with family and they spotted, what they're doing, The Shadows, Season 3, and I didn't know it was on there. You know, it's things. It's not a very intuitive interface anyway for promoting its range of shows. And to be fair, it does have a wide range of categories to be trying to promote to a very broad audience. But I think that's the show's problem. I don't think, and I know a lot of people who dislike Jodie Whittaker or Chibnall or want to gain clicks for their platform, their voice platform, will say that it's losing viewers and it's because it's bad. I think if it starts to lose viewers, apart from the fact, as you say, there's often a trend of viewer drop from early episodes onwards, sometimes a slight increase near the end. I think a lot of it, the problem is to do with how we watch television. And I think that's a shame because this stuff should be on Netflix. This stuff can compete with a lot of those big names at the moment in the quirky characters, the Umbrella Academies, the Dirk Gently's, The Timeless, all these sort of shows which are sitting on the streaming platforms, proper, you know, the subscription ones. It's there. It would work well there, but they're not going to see it. And, you know, BBC needs to think about that. I'm not sure BritBox is the answer, because I'm pretty sure that BritBox appeals to a different demographic. You know, younger people are going to be subscribed to Netflix, Disney Channel, I think, because Disney's very big with younger people that I know still. Well, it's big with all ages, but Disney, Prime maybe, because of how they order. I just don't think that Doctor Who's really in those spaces.
No. Obviously...
So it's BBC Smart. It'll take that into account, but we'll see.
There is a new interface for BBC iPlayer coming along, which anyone can sort of bring up by going into the settings and whatever, but it doesn't really, it makes it more sort of Netflix-y, Disney Plus-y by putting a sidebar.
I just don't think, I mean, the problem that BBC has is that it is a broad content provider.
Yeah.
So it streams, I mean, even though Netflix does have a broad content, I don't think it's content, the BBC content is very much British, while I think a lot of people now enjoy, young people enjoying content which is global. Squid Game being a big example of this at the moment. And I'm not sure how much value BritBox or iPlayer has to that sort of market.
Mm.
Because it feels it's by definition British. And sometimes if you're looking for escapism, you want to escape what is British, with a few notable exceptions, maybe. I think it's a big problem. And I still kind of feel like, I know they're trying to use Doctor Who as a way of, as a lead-in to their subscription. But I kind of feel it should still be on Netflix. It should be on something global. I'm making deals there because I think that's where Doctor Who thrives. And I'm just not convinced BritBox and iPlayer are the spaces for it to thrive anymore. And that's just the nature of the game and of politics, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, BritBox
You
is
don't have easy access to it.
no, BritBox is just classic Doctor Who. Although, and there is a US version of BritBox, but I would largely agree with you. It's baffling that it isn't on Netflix anymore.
I mean, they could. I would argue the way to do it would perhaps be that you sort of use BritBox or iPlayer to put material, a lot of material on them which isn't in the show. You could even do extended versions with extra scenes for BritBox and iPlayer, depending on, well, in this case, iPlayer, depending on how they do it. And then just farm out the televised version, to call for the sake of a better name, to the other streamers. I don't know. I just kind of feel like you need to get Doctor Who out there. You shouldn't be hemming it in, because it's a global brand. And yes, as you say, there are global ways that other people can watch it. But I just feel we're just not really, the BBC is still behind the times. I mean, it's been, how many, I know it sounds like we're backstreet drivers, backseat drivers, but how many years we've been saying that they needed to go to the model that they're doing now, and it's taken them a long time to reach it, and the writing's been on the cards in terms of watching how television's been consumed.
At least 5 years.
But it takes time for these things to happen, and I'm glad they have, but they're not responding fast enough, and that's a shame, because you've got quality television here. This is very good stuff. It feels like Doctor Who. It does feel like I can feel old school Doctor Who in there. I can feel what Chibnall's doing there. And one of the things I liked about the Time Planet is it felt very old school Doctor Who.
Oh, it did,
The
especially with those little
corridors.
flying guys flying around. In fact, the
Yes,
other night
really
on
fun.
Bonfire Night, I was playing with well, I took Daisy Sparker off her because she was getting a bit bored with it, not because I wanted to play with it. And then I was already filming stuff, so I decided to just start filming it like it was an old Doctor Who special effect. And those little triangular diamond things, they had that vibe, didn't they? Especially with the voice acting.
Yeah, there was a lot of classic vibes, and the dog best friend vibes. It's a very British thing, and playing that into the story and having Sontarans there, sort of adding some of that old school magic, but in a way that feels very, still feels very fresh. I like that. I mean, the design, like you say, the tall Sontarans, but they had quite tall Sontarans in The Two Doctors, didn't they? As far as I recall, they seemed taller. Am I misremembering that? Maybe I am.
No, I don't think you are misremembering it. There was definitely a tall Sontaran in The Two Doctors. There's clearly a clone batch of tall Sontarans.
Yeah, and I
For
think
changing light
it's
bulbs
fun
and
that they
things.
sort of. Sorry?
For changing light bulbs.
Change. So I think there's a lot of there's a lot of understanding of the what has made Doctor Who good, and reapplying it without having it dominate the show through pressures of continuity, either local continuity is in terms of what's happened to Sontarans recently, apart from a line about links, which you don't need to know or seen the story to enjoy. Those things are kind of cool. I like that. That's fine. An acknowledgement of the past, the aesthetics of the past. The only thing that I thought, and my family said this at the same time, is that I am a little surprised that if they have 7.5 minute sleep cycles on their ships, why not stagger those ship sleep cycles so you've always got someone on guard? You need a space of like 10 minutes for a nice turnaround of guards. But again, I suppose you've got to assume that they're arrogant, that they are dealing with what is ants. That's not part of the way that they do things. Or maybe that would be seen as weak. I don't know. But that seems a little odd. But yeah, like I said, these are tiny niggles in an otherwise very good show. I think damaging the TARDIS adds an extra level of threat. I like the
Yes.
fact that Jodie's doctor feels like more like a Davison or Troughton who's having to fight to keep up. That's good.
Yeah, I
I
like
think
that
that
as
adds
well.
an extra energy, and that works for her doctor. I think that's what's most important, is finding a way that works for the character. And I think that sort of lack of certainty works really well with Whittaker to see her sort of work her way through it with little control. Suits her. So that was good as well.
Yeah. Well, something we didn't do last week was
What's that?
we didn't rate the episode. We usually do a rating, don't we? And we didn't do a rating.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I used to love ratings when I was 11, but I kind of thought we'd grown up from that. But sure, if you want to do ratings, I can go back imagining I'm reading your Sinclair once more,
Okay.
checking to see what video games they rated out of 7. I have 10. I'm happy to do that. If you want to do that,
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah.
makes you feel younger.
Well, if you like it, I mean, it doesn't really, just it makes me feel that everything's tidier, which is equally concerning. And I
Yes,
would,
that's the middle-aged man approach, isn't it?
yeah, and I would be
It's no
reading.
longer you've given up trying to feel younger. You'd be happy if things were just tidier. The middle-aged family man.
Oh.
Go on then.
Yeah, no, yeah, I
Don't
mean,
cry
you've hit
about
the nail on the head there, absolutely.
Yes, I did feel like I plunged the dagger a little too deep.
I would be
And then
reading.
realizing that twisted it a little bit.
So I'd be reading Zap 64, just to clarify it there. No, cheap
Oh God,
£90 computers in
one of
my
the old
house.
owners and snobbishness.
Anyway, so I mean, I would give it 8.5, maybe 9 out of 10 last week's episode. I was really, really enthused by it, and I still am. It does still feel like one of the best hours of Doctor Who that I've watched, certainly since 2005. So it's up there among the best. This week's episode, The War of the Suntarans, I'll give it an 8.
That's good.
Yourself?
It's hard. I mean, I enjoyed this episode just as much as last week. Like I said, I think there was a couple of things in the exposition which didn't land perfectly for me, and I wasn't overly. I still feel that Yaz sadly is the weak link in both. So I think I'd give both 9, or
Ooh.
close to 9.5. Maybe I'd give last week's 9.5. I don't know. That seems very high. And this one 9. I think last week's was marginally better. Well, no. I think I'll give them both. I'll give them both 9 because last week I hated the acid pool lead-in. I just didn't work for me at all. I thought it was terrible. But the
Yeah.
rest of it was really good. This week had nothing like that that made me feel cringy. But maybe it wasn't quite. No, I think they were both on par, so 9. Yeah. See, clearly we haven't. Clearly, I need to read my Your Sinclairs again and get used to the rating systems. And
I mean, your famous indecision has clearly not changed.
well, I mean, it's one of those things, isn't it? It's like how do you round an experience into a singular number?
Well,
It's
yeah.
a very arbitrary thing, isn't it?
It is.
It's a vibe.
It is.
Yeah, so I think both have been very good, and I think the fact, as I say, that it's reinvigorated me into the show in a way that I didn't think the show could do anymore.
Yeah.
I thought I was just tired, just moved on and tired of it, and now I'm looking forward to next week's.
Yeah.
But to be fair, I don't think it. I think I was tired of it because it was the same show over and over again, and this feels like it's a different show.
Yes.
It feels different vibe, different format. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how it's going to resolve. I don't know where it's going to resolve. And that's really exciting. I also say Swarm, I really liked. I know some people weren't as keen, but I think those two are really strong villains.
Yeah, they are. There's just something
I love
else.
his outfit.
The whole dematerialization of Dan and Yaz, I'm not sure how well that was explained.
No, true.
But it was like it was another pull the rug out from under your feet moment that peppered the first episode, and then it's back here in the second episode. And what you said before about you kind of felt like you're watching the same show week after week. With this, you don't really know what's coming. Chris Chibnall's made these decisions to just, I don't want to say throw everything because that sounds very, that doesn't really meet with what's in my head, but it's like he's prepared to do anything to tell a story and to keep us engaged. And It's like the whole thing of when you're writing a script, make sure there's something interesting at the end of the page so the person reading it'll turn over. It's a bit like that. It's just ex it makes it more exciting because you don't know what's going to happen next and you're on the edge of your seat and it keeps you engaged because we want to be surprised all the time, don't we? That's why we watch
Yeah.
films and TV shows and listen to music because we want, well, for me anyway, because we want to be surprised. We don't hear the same thing or watch the same thing over and over again. It has to be a surprise for engagement purposes. And I think, I don't, obviously, Chris Chibnall hasn't just learned this, but it feels like he's only just bringing this into Doctor Who now, maybe because he feels that the confines of the old format are now gone and he's got this six-part hourly series to do, and maybe there's more space in the time slot to maybe just pull these tricks. But I think we're being treated here, and I think we should embrace it and spread the word as Doctor
Yeah,
Who watchers.
absolutely. I know a couple of friends who aren't watching Doctor anymore. I'll definitely be saying, you need to watch it. It's fun, still unpredictable, and it's like the sort of stuff you're watching at the moment on Netflix. So, that's a big. I agree. I agree with all of that. I think he's. I get it. I mean, some people would say this was evident with things like Broadchurch, but I think, in terms of doing sort of that long form, episodic drama. It suits him better than the short episode 45-minute thing, and I think we're seeing that, and that's nice because I like there's stuff he's done that I have enjoyed, not just in his recent as producer, but I mean as I say, 42, I always really thought that was a really strong, fast-paced and slightly subversive to format, in a way that sort of made him very vulnerable in a way that the show hadn't been doing. So, he's got a lot of strength, and it's kind of a shame that, in his at the back end of his tenure, that this is, well, I don't know, maybe this is the good time, because I keep saying, you can never have a bad end. You can have a bad middle and a bad beginning, but never a bad end. So maybe this will be his legacy
Maybe.
in the same way that for McCoy, those last two seasons of McCoy are his legacy over the first.
Yeah, you could be right there. We've got something else to talk about, though. You may probably have already heard that Bob Baker passed away a few days ago. Bob Baker was one half of the
Yeah.
Bristol Boys Doctor Who writing team in the 1970s. He was also the co-creator of K9 and quite a few of the Wallace and Gromit scripts for Aardman Animations. It is very sad that he's passed away, and he's obviously he was involved. He had K9. He was still trying to. There was a new series of K9 coming along soon, I think, or a new K9 production of some sort. It's really sad. He was such a good Doctor Who writer as well, and he's the last of the Doctor Who writers from the Jon Pertwee era as well. He's passed away. There's
Oh.
no more writers from that era.
Yeah. Time's a cruel thing. But yeah, that's it, that is sad. I don't really. I must admit, I don't know that much about Bob Baker outside of the productions and the work he's done in that sort of sense. But yeah, no, that's it is a shame. I was just going to say, I mean, it sounds like. And I imagine so that, K9 will live on, which is a very shallow compensation, but it's kind of nice that the legacy of the work that he's been involved in, as especially as a co-creator, will, I'm sure, live on in people's memories for a long time, as well as his contribution to the creative world.
Yeah, he wrote for several seasons of Bergerac, also wrote on shows like Z Cars, Shoestring, Public Eye, Call Me Mister. There's a very lovely tribute posted to him from the K9 official account on Twitter, which you should probably check out. I'll put that in the show notes. So yeah, that's sad news. We'll be back again next week for another Casterbris podcast about Doctor Who. Until then, it's goodbye from us.